the podcast from Belmont Chapel in Exeter, sharing the story, living the life. For more information, go to belmontchapel.org.uk.
I think, as you have already heard, the theme for tonight is Forge Strong Families. It's up on the screen there. And mention was made of Proverbs 23, and that is on the term card. But I'm not actually going to read all of Proverbs 23 tonight. I think I'm like Chris. I suffer a bit with overload of Proverbs when you read a whole chapter. And I'm not sure with that chapter I could compress it all in to talk about families. So what I've done is I've gone through the book of Proverbs and picked out different proverbs relating to tonight's theme, and I'm going to read them. They'll be up on the screen in a moment. If you like, I've walked through a wonderful garden with a great variety of species in it and picked some of them out so that we can look at them, and I've had to leave the rest for another time. So we're going to have this reading first of all. I won't give all the references, I'll just read it through, but you'll see them there. Wisdom will save you from the adulterous woman, from the wayward woman with her seductive words, who has left the partner of her youth and ignored the covenant she has made before God. My son, do not despise the Lord's discipline, and do not resent his rebuke, because the Lord disciplines those he loves, as a father the son he delights in. May your fountain be blessed, and may you rejoice in the wife of your youth. A loving doe, a graceful deer, may her breasts satisfy you always. May you ever be intoxicated with her love. Why, my son, be intoxicated with another man's wife? Why embrace the bosom of a wayward woman? Do not lust in your heart after her, your neighbor's wife, after her beauty, or let her captivate you with her eyes. Can a man scoop fire from his lap without his clothes being burned? Can a man walk on hot coals without his feet being scorched? A man who commits adultery has no sense. Whoever does so destroys himself. Blows in disgrace are his lot, and his shame will never be wiped away. Whoever loves discipline loves knowledge, but whoever hates correction is stupid. Those who spare the rod hate their children, but those who love them are careful to discipline them. He who finds a wife finds what is good and receives favor from the Lord. Discipline your children, for in that there is hope. Do not be a willing party to their death. Start children off on the way they should go, and even when they're old, they will not turn from it. Folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline will drive it far away. Do not withhold discipline from children. If you punish them with the rod, they will not die. Punish them with the rod and save them from death. Listen to your father who gave you life. Do not despise your mother when she is old. Buy the truth and do not sell it. Wisdom, instruction, and insight as well. The father of a righteous child has great joy. A man who fathers a wise son rejoices in him. May your father and mother rejoice. May she who gave you birth be joyful. A wife of noble character, who can find? She is worth far more than rubies. Forge strong families. To help us to begin to think about this vast subject, and I think we could have a whole series of sermons on it, but just to help us along tonight, I'm going to focus, first of all, on what Proverbs says about the relationship between spouse and spouse, which in this case I take to mean, in this context, I take to mean a man and a woman. And then we will consider the relationship between partners and their children. Because if those relationships are in order, I think we'll be well on the way to forging strong families. Now, maybe you're sitting there thinking, I'm not married, I have no children. But maybe that will happen one day. You might have one or both of them. But in any event, I think each of us all are involved in families in one way or another. So we can support other families and we can pray for them. I'm sure God has something which we can learn from his word tonight to tell us. So don't switch off, please, if you feel this isn't for me. I'm sure it is, and we can help other people if it's not directly, as it were, applicable to us. So first of all, then, with regards to marriage, Proverbs tells us that it's a covenantal relationship. I won't say chapter every time. I'll just give the reference, 2:16 and 17. Wisdom will save you also from the adulterous woman, from the wayward woman with her seductive words, who has left the partner of her youth and ignored the covenant she made before God. That's to say, marriage is a legally binding agreement between the two partners of a marriage. Today, many couples live together, and when it's suggested that they get married, the response is often, well, I don't need a piece of paper to show that I love the person I'm living with. Why do I need that? Well, of course they don't need a bit of paper to show them that they love them. But when we examine the marriage vows and what's said in a wedding service, we see it's not so much about the present position and what they think and feel, but it's a commitment, a promise of future love and future togetherness until death do us part. So here's some of the words from a wedding service. The bridegroom is asked, will you love, whatever the bride is called, comfort her, honor and protect her, and forsaking all others, be faithful to her as long as you both shall live. He replies, I will. The bridegroom says to the bride, I, as it were, Rob, take you, Joan, to be my wife, to have and to hold from this day forward, for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health, to love and to cherish, till death us do part. I learnt my marriage vows. I hope you know yours, because it's solemn promises you made. Be good if you haven't learnt them or recap them for a while. Maybe go back to your marriage service and have a think and remind yourself of those wonderful promises you made. But as I said, the vows are all about commitment and behavior. The promises to love and to cherish in all circumstances, from this day forward till death us do part. And second, not only does Proverbs say marriage is based on a covenant, it's based on friendship and love. Going back to 2:17, it refers to the wayward wife who has left the partner of her youth. I don't read Hebrew, but I'm given to understand the words used here are probably better translated as the friend with whom she lived in intimacy. The friend with whom she lived in intimacy. The wayward wife has left her most intimate friend, the person whom she married. So it's saying your spouse is to be your friend, indeed your best friend. Do you look on your spouse as your best friend? Not only that, your spouse is to be your lover. 5:18 and 19. May your fountain be blessed. May you rejoice in the wife of your youth. A loving doe, a graceful deer, may her breast satisfy you always. May you ever be intoxicated with her love. I think we're familiar with that idea of being friend and lover. But historically, that has not always been the case. Historically, women were often regarded as chattels, pieces of furniture that could be sold and moved on and discarded at a whim. And marriage was not so much about love way back when, but it was more about two families coming together to improve their wealth and their social standing. And it's also more about money as well, the financial agreement between those two families. And sexual fulfillment could be found outside of marriage. So what was being said here at the time was revolutionary to many people. Your wife is to be your friend and your lover. It's not just an economic agreement between two families and you kind of got on with it. Now, while we all like the thought, I think, that a couple get married and they sail off into the sunset and live happily ever after without any difficulty, the reality is somewhat different. Why? People change. The exclamations, "She's not the person I married," or "He's not the person I married," are often heard a few years into marriage. And of course, they're right. We live and grow and change. People don't stay exactly the same. The American Christian and theologian Lewis Smedley said this: "When I married my wife, I had hardly a smidgen of sense for what I was getting into with her. How could I know how much she would change over 25 years? How could I know how much I would change? My wife has lived with at least 5 different men since we were wed, and each of the 5 has been me. The connecting link with my old self has always been the memory of the name I took on back there on the day of my wedding. I am he who will be there with you." Lived with 5 people. You get the point. There's been great change. And because marriage involves change, stickability is needed. Perseverance is required. I think this series of sermons is based on a book by Bill Hybels, Making Life Work. And he's very realistic about this aspect of change. He writes these words, which I think are very wise words. "Our marriage requires a tremendous amount of work. Personal hurts, personal differences and pressures of a highly visible lifestyle increase our challenges. But we pray, we talk, we seek advice, we discipline ourselves, we grow, we change, we compromise, we apologize, we confess, we adjust our expectations, we remind ourselves of our commitment, we look to the future, and we refuse to give up. We are in this marriage for life. We have chosen to stay with the spouse of our youth, and we thank God for each step that brings us closer. Why do we keep working at it? Because we know that in order to forge a strong family, we need to establish a solid marriage. Be wonderful if solid always meant easy and happy, but sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes solid means solidly committed, solidly persevering, solidly striving for the goal." Wise words indeed. And the goal he has in mind in this context is having a lifelong Christ-centered marriage where the couple rejoice in each other, in the wife of their youth. Or in many cases, it could be the wife of the middle age, but whatever. So let us do all we can to encourage and forge solid marriages. So if you are contemplating, I don't know everyone's situation here, if you are contemplating marriage, do make sure you go along to the marriage preparation course which Belmont run. I still remember things that were said to me at the marriage course I went on many, many years ago. One little hint is for you guys: if your partner keeps repeating something, you're not listening. You need to listen, pay attention, and take heed of what has been said. A female will often repeat things. But anyway, that's what I learned many years ago, and it still holds true. So marriage preparation course. And then for those who are married, as we've already heard, there is the marriage course. I think it's for people who have been married for about 6 months onwards. There's no upper age limit. Attending the course is not saying there's something wrong with your marriage. It's actually saying you want to improve it and you're prepared to take steps to do that. To obtain a car driving license, on average you can expect to take around 35 to 45 hours professional help to pass the test, plus additional practice as much as you can. And when you have a car, an annual MOT is required, and generally you have a service as well to make sure everything is running smoothly and there's not going to be a breakdown when you're halfway up the M5. So use all the available tools, as it were, that are available to us Surely our marriages are more important than our MOT or our driving license. So if you haven't been on a marriage course, whether you've been married for 5 years or 50 years, could I recommend you go on one? Say if you haven't been between 5 and 10 years, go on the marriage course. And because of this sermon, John and I are going to go on one. So I'm not preaching to you, I'm not doing it myself. We decided this is something that would be good for us to do. Now, a few moments ago, well, actually, I didn't refer to it. I should have talked about the hazardous journey of marriage, because it is a hazardous journey. We're never sure, as it were, what's around the corner. And the main hazard that the book of Proverbs highlights for marriage is adultery. It has devastating consequences for all involved. Consequently, it's mentioned in a number of the Proverbs. Why, my son, be intoxicated with another man's wife? Why embrace the bosom of a wayward woman? Do not lust in your heart after her beauty, or let her captivate you with her eyes. Can a man walk on hot clothes without his feet being scorched? Well, of course he can't. And just because we happen to be a Christian doesn't mean that we're immune to this temptation, that we're immune to adultery. It happens whether we're Christians or whether we're not Christians. It's a danger that is there for all. It's to be avoided at all costs because of its destructive consequences. To quote Bill Hybels again, no matter how unsatisfying or painful your marriage is, or how much seemingly irreparable damage it has sustained, adultery is never the answer. Adultery will not reduce your pain. It will eventually and inevitably multiply it. And when adultery comes out into the open, as it almost always does, the shock and shame will be so much worse than you anticipated. No matter how much you are suffering in your marriage, adultery is not the answer. So if you ever find yourself in or being drawn in that direction, I think the first thing to do is to admit, to acknowledge to yourself the position you are in. Then however hard it might be, and it will be hard, I'm sure, however hard it might be, go along to a wise Christian counselor. I say Christian deliberately, to go to a wise Christian counselor for assistance, because your marriage is in imminent danger. You're no longer rejoicing in the wife of your youth. And ask God, ask the Lord to help you and your spouse as you come to terms with the position you find yourself in, and seek a way forward together. Avail yourself of all the help that is out there. Marriages have recovered from such situations. All is not lost. There is hope. Be brave. Remember your marriage vows. Do the right thing. Take the right course of action, however difficult it might be if you find yourself in that situation. Well, there's a vast amount more that could be said about marriage and establishing strong ones. But I think it's time to move on to the relationship between parents and children. There's the story of a young student of child behavior who frequently delivered a lecture called 10 Commandments for Parents. And then he married. Life went on, and he became a father. The title of the lecture was altered to 10 Hints for Parents. Another child arrived. The lecture became Some Suggestions for Parents. Third was born, and he stopped lecturing altogether. But seriously, I think Proverbs does give us some timeless instructions for both parents and children so that strong families can be formed. And two key elements of these instructions are teaching and discipline. So first, teaching. Parents have the primary responsibility for bringing up their children, for teaching them what is right, what is wrong, what's true, what's false, what's wise, and what's foolish, and the way of faith. 22:6. Start children off on the way they should go, and even when they're old, they will not turn from it. It has been said, if you've been here on previous evenings during this course, but I think it's well to remind ourselves of the fact that we're dealing here with Proverbs. We're dealing with a particular proverb here. A proverb is not a promise. Proverb is not a promise. Nor does it always have to be taken literally. Sometimes it is, sometimes it's not. The best definition I could come across was this: a proverb is a short saying that expresses a general truth for practical, godly living. A short saying that expresses a general truth for practical, godly living. So the proverb, start children off in the way they should go, and even when they're old, they will not turn from it, is not saying that a child who's been brought up in a Christian family, with Christian parents who've done their best to explain everything to their child, the way of the cross, the way of following Christ and what that means, is not a guarantee that that child will follow that course for the rest of their life. And if they don't, well, we can blame the parents. Now, I've heard that said before, but that's not what the proverb is saying. And people have been bowed down with guilt because of that. But that, to me, is to interpret the proverb completely. To use the non-biblical proverb, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. Yes, as parents, we can do all we can to tell them about Christ and the way of faith, but ultimately, they have to make that choice themselves. Now, teaching and training a child involves many, many aspects. So I'm only going to concentrate on one tonight, and that's teaching our children about the Lord, how we might go about that. As parents, we have the prime responsibility for it, to tell them about the God who loves them, about the Son who died on a cross for them, who was raised from the dead to save them, and the Spirit who gives new life and indwells all believers in the Lord Jesus Christ. And we have the responsibility to tell them what it means to be a disciple. Of course, others like godparents, friends, church family, all sorts of different people could be involved. Indeed, I say should be involved, because they can have a huge influence for good on children. I think here at Belmont, we are incredibly blessed with the number of youth groups we have, children's group from naught up to 18 and beyond. Well, all ages really are covered. It's a great blessing. And parents, yes, they should come with their children to such groups or send them to. And wise children will go to those groups. But ultimately, parents have a responsibility. They can't pass that responsibility off and say, well, that's the churches, I'll take them along, and they'll say nothing at home. Let me be very personal here. As far back as I can remember, when I was growing up in Dublin with Trevor, my elder brother, every morning after breakfast time, we'd still be sitting at the table, and four Bibles and Scripture Union notes would be brought out. From the youngest age I can remember, that is something that would happen. When we were old enough, we'd read a verse each, we'd read round, and then we'd pray together, more often than not, kneeling beside our chairs. Sometimes we'd discuss what it said, sometimes we wouldn't. We'd just pray. To be frank, I didn't like doing that, because I was always worried that my friend was going to ring the doorbell and see us doing these studies. I was so embarrassed. But my parents stuck with it. And I'm eternally thankful for them that they did that. They did their best to show my brother and myself the way of Christ, what it means to follow him and to be a disciple of his. And when my two children were growing up, Wendy, their mother, who's now with the Lord, and I took a less formal and a less regular approach than my parents did, and indeed Wendy's parents did. And yet, in the grace of God, Hannah and Rachel became children of God and inheritors of the kingdom of heaven by faith. But you know what? If I had my time again, I would be more regular with the training of my children. If you're a parent, I suggest you think seriously about how you train your children and what you do with them, bringing them up in the way of Christ. A few years ago, we were on holiday. I think we were down in Wales. I think it was at St. David's Cathedral. Anyway, I picked up this book called The Family Worship Book by Terry Johnson. In it, he says this: if your children are in your home for 18 years, you have 6,570 occasions, figuring 6 days a week, for family worship. If you learn a new psalm or hymn each month, they will be exposed to 216 in those 18 years. Think in terms of the long view. What is the cumulative impact of just 15 minutes each day for 18 years? The rate of 6 days a week, excluding Sundays, one spends an hour and a half a week in family worship, about the length of a home Bible study, 78 hours a year, about the length of 2 weekend retreats, and 1,404 hours over the course of 18 years, about the length of 8-week-long summer camps. When you establish your priorities, think in the terms of the cumulative effect of this upon your children and upon you. I found those figures amazing, weren't they? 15 minutes a day is not a lot, but over the years, amazing the way it mounts up, and amazing what you can learn and be taught in those times. You can spend much longer, of course, if you wish, but that was just 15 minutes. Of course, every family situation is different. I'm not saying you must go out and buy this book if you have young children and stick to it, but it's there as a suggestion which might be a helpful tool for you. So now, discipline. Proverbs does not hold a naive or idealistic view of children. It knows they will need correction as well as instruction when they start out in life. 23:13, do not withhold discipline from your children. 13:24, those who spare the rod hate their children, but those who love them are careful to discipline them. Now, I realize that discipline is a dirty word for some and a contentious issue for many. But I think we would all agree that without some form of discipline, children will become wayward, wild, and unruly. As 22:15 says, folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline will drive it far away. 19:18, discipline your children, for in that there is hope. So here are a few comments on discipline, which I hope will be helpful. First, in the book of Proverbs, the whole subject of the wisdom of discipline is overarched or undergirded with love. Discipline is involved because parents love their children and desire the very best for them. The Lord disciplines those he loves as the Father, the Son he delights in. In 13:24, the second part, those who love their children are careful to discipline them. Second, how a child is disciplined, I think, needs to be consistent. Yet it needs to vary from one child to another. Children are not clones. For one child, a look might wither them, might melt them, and nothing need be said. For another, maybe a timeout or a different form of discipline will be needed. It's not a case of one formula will fit all. Third, the Hebrew word, again, I'm not a Hebrew scholar, but I read these things. The Hebrew word for rod, shabbat, which is used in Proverbs, is also used in the book of Psalms, and it refers to the rod used by the shepherd for caring for his sheep. There's no evidence, although it's sometimes said, there's no evidence that the rod was ever used to physically strike the sheep. Psalm 23, which I'm sure many of us know, include the words, your rod and your staff comfort me. It's of no comfort, is it, to be hit by a rod? At least I didn't think it was on the rare occasions my mother had a wooden spoon on my hand. As mentioned earlier, not every proverb is to be taken literally. To hold the view that unless we're taking a rod to our children, that we're failing as parents, seems to me to be missing the point of what the proverb is saying. The point is more, I think, because we love our children, we are to use appropriate means to discipline them. And every child needs to know that as parents, we love them and are doing our best for them. And fifthly, just so you're aware of the legal position, under Section 58 of the Children Act 2004, it's unlawful for a parent or carer to smack their child except where this amounts to reasonable punishment. Now, what amounts to reasonable punishment is decided on each situation. But physical punishment will be considered unreasonable if it leaves a mark on the child, or if the child is hit with an implement such as a cane or a belt. And last but not least, remember, Belmont run a family parenting course on a regular basis. And again, it's something you might like to go on. Again, it's not saying there's something wrong with the way you're bringing up your children. You're wanting to improve that and to make that better. So to conclude, many, if not all of us, have memories, some of them much more painful memories than other, because of the way a family relationship or a relationship has turned out, or we live with the pain of some ongoing situation, some relationship. But whatever our circumstance, let us remember that we have a loving Heavenly Father who brings good out of bad situations, who forgives our foolish ways, and His Son came not to condemn us, but to give us new life, to set us on a new path. The past can't be undone, but there can be healing and a way forward with God's help. So let us, with the Spirit's enabling, do all that we can to forge strong families. And to use a proverb to finish with, let us trust in the Lord with all our heart, knowing that He will direct our ways.